nothing. You lose.
I've never been so high in my life.
The category is Butch Queen, Butch Queen, Butch Queen, first time in drags at a ball.
Hey, y'all, how's it going? It's your boy, Ricky Carmona. Welcome to Who Shot Ya? It's good to be here this evening. It's even better because with me, I have LA Weekly film critic April Wolf. What's up, April?
Hello, Ricky.
Hi. And back up in the building, podcast crowd favorite. She's just going to drop that she's a producer at the Golden Globes and act like that's nothing and just like keep telling her story. Drea Clark is with us once again. Hey, Drea.
Hey, Ricky.
We have a very good show lined up for you. But before we get to that, I'm just going to check in with both of you. Hey, Drea, you're our guest. I'll start with you. What's good, girl?
Why, thank you.
It's a pleasure.
What's good with me is when I was driving here down luxurious Wilshire Boulevard and taking my sweet time because there's all this traffic, I looked over and there were two dudes on skateboards right next to me. And one of them was doing tricks and then the other one was holding a camera and scooting along and shooting the tricks. And it was a straight up time travel moment for me back to like eighth grade, because I remember for some pocket of time being obsessed with not just skateboarding, but like skate videos. And it was so sweet to just turn and be like, oh, yeah, nice ollie, bro. Like, it was such a fun little unexpected boop. It's a million years ago. I'm young. Life is happening. So, yeah, that's what's good.
April, what's good with you?
I'm going to get sentimental because my cat, Turkey, turned 17 this week. And she's been with me almost my entire adult life. And I am grateful every day that she is with me. And my relationship with her, I would say she's probably my best friend, and my husband will probably agree with that, and is also often very jealous of my relationship with my cat. So I just want to give a shout out to Turkey.
Shout out to Turkey. I mean, I know cats don't travel as well or as much as like dogs do, but we've had a dog in the studio. Whenever you want to bring Turkey in the house, please bring Turkey to the house.
Let's here. Not.
Okay, let's cancel that. Cancel that then. Cancel that. Well, I will just wait till someone asks me.
Well, what I would love to know what is good with you.
Oh, damn. April, thank you so much. Thank you, April. Thank you. Your boy has been doing some big boy shopping lately. I went to Target. And I bought a mat for my bathtub, and I came, like, I did that, like, on Saturday, and I came into work on Monday, like, woo, what'd you do this weekend, Ricky? I'm gonna tell you, y'all, I bought a bath mat, like a big grown-ass man! And
so I have to assume,
yes?
you're 22? No?
Well, I feel like I have the mentality of a 22-year-old, but...
And the slippery bath surfaces of a 22-year-old?
Not anymore! Not anymore! Your boy is coming up!
Oh. I mean, it's more just a matter of safety, really. It's not even being an adult. It's like it's geriatric.
He forgot to adult-proof his apartment.
Four people in my apartment who have spent the week and have had concussions in my bathroom. I should mention it. That's what started it.
Cancel that insurance policy, finally, you know?
You know your boy can't... He can't afford health insurance, but that's an episode that we will have later. And what else is good is that on this week's episode, we will be talking about Blade Runner 2049.
You do not know what pain is yet. You will learn.
Thank you, Jared Leto. Plus, we will be talking about the Harvey Weinstein scandal that is just... It's all over the news right now.
It's gross.
If you haven't been aware, it's disgusting. It's disgusting. And we will be talking, and we will be giving you our weekly staff picks. Alonzo, shout out to Alonzo. He is the other co-host of the show. He is not here this week, but he'll be joining us at the end of the show with his weekly staff pick. You'll hear it from Drea, you'll hear it from April. It'll be dope. But now at this point of the show, this is where we have our weekly segment that we call... it's called...
Sit, 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 sit.
It's called... which stands for...
What was that noise?
That was the... I was hitting the K on that. That was... Well, that was my college courses enunciating vocal techniques. Whoa, hitting it. It a dick. Thank you. which stands for, is this important? Do you care? How this works is, I will read a news blurb or a headline. My two co-hosts will answer the question, is this important? Do you care? Let's go ahead and get started. So the first one, do you know who's not a fan of Jim Carrey? Academy Award winner Tommy Lee Jones. Jim Carrey was on Norm Macdonald's podcast this week, where he was discussing the work that he has done with Tommy Lee Jones in Batman Forever. And here's what he said about working with Tommy Lee Jones.
And the blood just drained from his face, and he started shaking, and he got up and he went like this. He must have been in mid kill me fantasy or something like that. He was like like this, and he went like to hug me, and he said, "I hate you. I really don't like you," like that.
Jim Carrey is, he's going through some things right now, if you have not seen him on giving interviews. But is this important? Do you care about what Tommy Lee Jones thinks of Jim Carrey?
I don't think it's important in any way. I feel pretty confident saying that. But I do care only because Jim Carrey is on like an Off the Rocket tour 2017, but that story makes Tommy Lee Jones sound nutball crazy. So he's the one who was like, yeah, he got in my face and rah, rah. I'm like, it's a very funny twist of, oh yeah, that didn't land where I thought it would. Also, Jim Carrey, I'm a huge fan of him going off the deep end. There's like the 6-minute YouTube documentary on him being a painter. Mm-hmm. And not only is it backed up by the fact that the paintings he's created, I think, are so legitimately interesting, but he's an artist. We don't have a lot of people who are artists that I think of that are just like immersed in it. And like, I'm that character. I'm an artist. I'm an actor. I'm doing all this. You know, it's sort of an Andy Warhol ridiculous pop, and I'm all for it.
I'm all for whatever planet Jim Carrey is on, and the vessel that the spirit that he gets and speaks his truth. I'm all for it, 100%. The screenwriter of the film Call Me By Your Name, screenwriter James Ivory, he wishes there was more male nudity in his film. He wasn't happy with how Call Me By Your Name turned out. He told Variety, and I quote, "Certainly in my screenplay, there were all sorts of nudity. But according to Luca, who is the director, both actors had it in their contract that there would be no frontal nudity, and there isn't, which I think is kind of a pity." Now, one of the actors that he's speaking about is Armie Hammer, who was nervous about all the nudity in the script. And I might have heard this wrong, but I think has a clause in his script about how much nudity he's allowed to show.
Oh, yeah, they always do.
Is this important? Do you all care about this? Are you aware of the film Call Me By Your Name? Sorry, this is when I say
it's
this.
It's a hot, erotic pick.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. You like how I said that?
Yeah.
I sat on the edge of my seat.
Okay.
It's, you know, it's got a feeling, a mood, a tone.
Mm.
But, you know, just in terms of nudity, I mean, it's always about the gender thing. Like, I feel like I'm like everyone who's listening probably knows we're going to be like, well, you know, women always have this problem, too. but, you know, it's one of those things where everyone's just trying to get the actors to get their shirts off. I mean,
it is kind of ridiculous. First off, James Ivory, who is the screenwriter of this, has like a vast filmography. So like knowing who he is and knowing like he also has a great history of male Wang on screen. So there's Room with the View. There's several just like very chill peni shots of dudes straight frolicking around a pond with their donkers wonking.
Okay.
And then someone changing, Julian Sands changing. And I appreciate that because what he's talking about is the chillness of it. It's just like bodies are bodies. And if you always make so much more of a deal of a dude getting his dong, then you do a woman getting everything, then, you know, that's where that imbalance comes. But with this, which I haven't seen, some of what I read about it was because it's about this relationship between a 17 and a 24-year-old, that it's already a fine line of being erotic and romantic, but you know, that is a different story that you're trying to tell rather than two grown men who are, or man and woman, whatever it is. I think there's other things that they were considering.
Yeah, I wasn't missing it.
Okay.
We'll say, you know, I do agree, though, I would love to see more dong.
More dong.
Dong.
I'm going to bring that up in Blade Runner, too.
So, okay. Just,
so FYI, that combo is coming
back up.
But, you know, nudity in general needs to be just acceptable and not lurid. And that's across the board for males and females on film. You know, we always talk about male gaze, female gaze, what that means. But it's just not making it gross. Like, the nude body is, you know, beautiful and human and wonderful. So
Okay. And moving on, another story. Gloria Steinem is the reason for Wonder Woman. She saved Wonder Woman, y'all. In an interview with Vanity Fair, there's a movie coming out called Professor Marston and the Women, directed by Angela Robinson. And Angela Robinson said that Steinem complained to DC Comics when the creators stripped Wonder Woman of her powers in one of their story arcs. She wanted the character to be strong. When Ms. Magazine was published in 1972, its very first cover featured Wonder Woman. Whoa! Is this important? Do you care?
I think feminist history is always important and not acknowledged enough, especially when it intersects with pop culture in just a straight-up cool way like this one. I'm super excited about Professor Marston and the Women. That's sort of a segue from this, because not only was it about making Wonder Woman stronger, but the women in his life were fascinating and complex and strong, and he integrated a lot of that into the story. The fact that I didn't know Gloria Steinem had any part in making her cultural voice heard. So I'm, you know, always a big fan of whatever Ms. Steinem is doing or did.
Professor Marston and the Wonder Woman, I can definitely say, is very good.
Oh, good.
Okay.
My positive review hits it this week.
Oh, perfect.
So people can read it.
Oh, I can't wait.
Where can they read it out?
At LAweekly.com.
Bam.
I think that movie, it elucidates that history in a way that I thought was completely unexpected. And so I'm so happy that Angela's out there getting an opportunity to give all of these interviews, because she is kind of doing a history lesson. This is a bigger film, and this is not the kind of thing where normally we would get to just kind of get on our platforms and like tell people that Gloria Steinem did this or Gloria Steinem did that. But she gets to have a large platform with this tour. And I'm just really, because I, you know, I already knew about Gloria Steinem, you know, I was a women's studies minor. So, you know, I
humble
really,
brag.
Yeah, I spent that money really well. but I love that it gets to be a widespread thing. You know, we're talking about in this podcast that I never thought anyone would bring this up, where I'm like, oh, yeah, let's do this. Let's talk about it.
Excellent. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing Professor Marston and the Women. I saw the trailer and I was like,
I have to say, it's okay. Wonder Women.
Professor, oh, is that right?
Yeah, Professor Marston and the Wonder
Professor
Women.
Professor Marston and the
Wonder
Women. Okay,
I like that better, because that title, I was like, that's such a reductive thing. Do you know what I mean? For like, yeah, what a cool feminist little nugget. And the women.
And like, the women. In parentheses,
right? Like, total afterthought style.
Can I just say that my dumbass male mind was just like, yeah, Professor Marston and women. No, that sounds right. See,
you're raised in this society, Ricky. That's not all on you.
I'm not proud of it. I'm not proud of it. When we, that's going to do it for it a day. I love how much that makes you laugh, Dre. That's fantastic. We're going to take a break right now, but when we come back, we are going to talk Blade Runner 2049. We will be back, y'all.
I love it.
Oh, good
man,
stuff.
Every time.
Well, I hope that you're enjoying this podcast you're listening to as much as we are pretending to. But anyway, why not listen to another podcast too? It's called The Flophouse.
And on our podcast, we have recently watched a movie, often a bad movie, and we review it on our podcast, but mainly talk about other stuff and, I don't know, hang out.
It's all about hanging out, feeling like you're being with your best friends. Who are your best friends? Us three. Dan McCoy, Emmy Award-winning writer for The Daily Show, Stuart Wellington, owner of the best bar in Brooklyn, Hinterlands, and Elliot Kalin, former Emmy-winning head writer for The Daily Show with Jon Stewart, former head writer of Mystery Science Theater 3000, The Return, so many things. Author of the upcoming children's book,
All Right, That's Enough.
the Elliot's credits just go on and on.
Yeah, but if you like the idea of listening to three funny guys talk about bad movies, then why not come over and listen to The Flophouse? It's available at MaximumFun.org or wherever fine podcasts are found.
So get out of here.
Welcome back to Who Shot Ya? I'm your host, Ricky Carmona. Joining me in the studio are...
April Wolf.
Yes! And...
Drea Clark.
That's what's up. Today we are discussing the Denis Villeneuve underperforming sci-fi film, Blade Runner 2049. Now, I could explain what this movie is about to you, but it would take me about 45 minutes, so I'm going to go over to my girl, Drea Clark, please.
All right. Blade Runner 2049 mm-hmm. is the most beautiful 14-hour film that's going to be released this year. It is about a cop who is a skin job, which in this world means that he is an artificial being. Mm-hmm. And he is out there searching for earlier models and killing them, a.k.a. retiring them. And he stumbles upon a mystery. And this mystery has to do with procreation, with secrets, with what is real, with implanted memories, with lost people who need to be found, and with a whole lot of sort of murky female issues. And yeah, and so at the end of it, you know what? He does solve that mystery. not to totally ruin it for you, but he cracks that code. It all comes together.
Yeah, he does. Ladies and gentlemen, that's Blade Runner 2049
right
there. Is that
okay?
Yeah, no, that was perfect. Yeah. That was like almost directly from the IMDb. Like, exactly.
I lifted that from their EPK.
I'm looking at it right now. I'm like, that's exactly how they described it. That's crazy.
So I went into this movie ready to not like it based on the fact that I didn't like the original Blade Runner. Ready to not like it based on the fact that, another sequel. Just here we go again with, remember that shit you used to like? Boom, here's another scooping of it. And instead, I was all in from the opening. I was like, as soon as it opened, as soon as it started, I was like, Roger Deakins is my guy.
Oh, yeah.
Denis Villeneuve is my guy.
Yeah.
Because it hooked me for 2 hours and 44 minutes. And when that 14-hour Criterion Collection comes out, I'm going to buy that as well. What did you all think of the movie overall? I mean, technically, it sounds like we were all on board. How did you feel about it?
I enjoyed it. I'm still thinking about it, which is wonderful. It's the same way I felt about Mother, where I was thinking about it after I left the theater. I still am the larger kind of grander ideas I think that it could have been talking about or could have gotten to, it shies away from all of those, you know? It's more just about something that's beautiful, which is interesting because, you know, after watching Arrival, you know, again recently, and just thinking about the huge global impact of, like, language and things that he was trying to make with that film compared to this, it's kind of a stark contrast. But this is still beautiful and thoughtful, and I still enjoyed it. It's a movie I'm going to be thinking about for a while.
Yeah.
I had a very similar reaction. I enjoyed it, but I felt like it fell short of the mark. Like, I kept getting this sort of freshman year philosophy from it of, oh, we're going to put out all of these sort of rudimentary concepts of what is reality and, you know, at what point is humanity registering in each individual and when do we count someone as a person worthy of value. Those are all great concepts, but they all seem just like I was getting the topical bullet point and not the rich text underneath. And part of that, I mean, not to just jump into it, but I had read some sort of like, I was trying to avoid any, I didn't really watch many trailers. I try not to read too many reviews before I see things. But I had, of course, in passing, seen these kind of disparaging comments of either the lack of female characters or the lack of substance in them. And that's one of the main ways that I found it failed the narrative and it failed the ability to really expand on some of those topics. Because, like, Mackenzie Davis is a perfect example. Mackenzie Davis's character in this, when she's first introduced, you know, you've already had this kind of problematic introduction to his girlfriend, who, you know, the hologram and who starts in the 50s thing in this very submissive Western female prettiness, docile kitchen, yeah. whatever.
Almost like a hoop skirt that's yeah. like poodle skirt.
Straight
or
up. Right, right. A full, like, I Love Lucy outfit.
Yeah.
And then there's sort of an acknowledgement that it's a artifice that she's like that, because he's like, you don't actually have to cook. You don't have to, you know, he's talking around it, and then she changes her clothes right away. And you're like, oh, okay. It's self-aware in a way. And then I really liked, oh, I like the idea of us being able to see that this man, Joe or Kay or whatever, is devaluing his own humanity. And in a way that we see that is through the female that he's decided is his partner. And he's like, oh, I'm not a human, so the partner that I'm worthy of is like a hologram. Mm-hmm. And then, sure, in his arc is that when they have their strange interaction with the three of them and there's an actual woman there, and that's the first time, conceivably, that he's had that, and it's because he's having this thought that maybe he's this actual born human and maybe there's all these and maybe I'm worth it. So I was getting glimmers of that and was like, oh, I love that. Like, I love the depth of that. But then I was like, I didn't feel that ever got earned or explored further. And then Mackenzie Davis, instead of getting to be that human side of him, just sort of disappears. She puts a tracker on him, which she didn't have to finger him with, like in The Kingsman. She just puts it in his pocket.
In the future, things are different.
Yeah. Yeah. But she puts the tracker, and it sort of pays off later because she's in like a street gang, like, of other robots. I just, anyway, it was these things of that it was like almost, and I do agree. I think Arrival, when I saw it, I'm like, oh, thematically, it's hitting all these ways. And I had a more, Arrival, I didn't enjoy as much as Blade Runner, but I had a more like intellectual response to it, where my thinking about it later was like, oh, that was smart. Oh, and they did this. Like, it was rewarding in a different way. And this one I enjoyed, but it didn't, I felt like I was never rewarded as much as I want it to be.
Well, I kind of wonder, you know, like the reward system that you're talking about, right? So we think possibly that this filmmaker, Denis Villeneuve, he did not maybe go far enough with these female characters or with these ideas that we can see glimmers of. And what if that was purposeful? I always try to approach it as like, what if this is purposeful? What if he didn't want to be so on the nose with it? What if the whole thing is, you know, like just have a hint of it and then we get to talk about it after? And so for me, that sometimes that's successful. I'm trying to give it like the benefit of the doubt where that could be a success, because I do see that those things were set up, like they were conscious of setting those things up, and that we are discussing them. And there are little bits and pieces here that make me feel like it could have been purposeful. Because there are shots, for instance, where, you know, you see this hologram woman and, you know, she's being so nice and so wonderful to Kay or Joe. And she's being very specific with him. You know, it's not just like, oh, honey, you're wonderful. She's mm-hmm. being very specific with him and knows him, his psychological makeup so intimately. But then we cut immediately from that intimacy to a giant billboard of the hologram product that she is, a giant version of her promising to give you everything that you want and everything that you need. And so there's constantly like this comeback to, you know, everything that you're seeing isn't real. And especially when it comes to women, and that is depressing, you know?
Yeah.
That's
well, and like you were saying, oh, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Like you were saying with the huge hologram, which is a beautiful effect. And it's a great moment. Like, there's, you know, the hero on the bridge making a dark choice is already. And then to, you know, sort of subvert it with this blue wig. And it has the face of the woman that he loved. And then the artifice of her not actually being a character. But there were no men. Like, there were no, you know, there were no male versions of that.
Gay men don't exist in the future.
And also, women don't care to look at men. Like, there, you know, there's the ballet mm-hmm. dancer. There's, like, all of the projected images are women. All of the bodies on display are women. The people getting humped against windows are women. So those are things, too. I'm like, this world, which has 18 people in it, from what I could tell, like, none of those people were people who wanted to fuck a man, apparently.
But I have to ask Ricky, did you notice this?
here that here's
that's a good question.
Yeah, here's what I noticed, and I took in how many women were in the movie, and I was like, dope, fantastic. Women, and when I say women who were in power, Robin Wright, who was, I mean, let's
my
just...
My queen!
Yo, shout out to Robin Wright forever, ever. The Jared Leto's...
Love.
Badass...
her name was Love.
Her name is Love. Okay, yeah. Thank you. Her. Ryan Gosling's... What was her name? Is it Joy?
Joy. Oh, Love and Joy. Love. Yep, that's happening.
Now, as I'm watching this movie, as a man, I'm just thinking, this is dope that there's this many women in this movie, and that the question that this movie is asking, I feel like the question that the first Blade Runner was asking was, do replicants have a soul? Does AI have a soul? Which is interesting to me, but not as interesting to me as, hey, us replicants, can we bring life to the world? Mm-hmm. Are we capable of that? Ooh, now you have my interest. And that just opens up a can of worms to me. And it felt like to me it was told from a female point of view, even though it was Ryan Gosling in the lead and Harrison Ford, and it's their story. As I'm watching it, I'm still... thinking, because there are so many women I'm seeing in this, that it's from their point of view. That's what I was getting out of it. I wasn't getting out of it the lack of things, the lack of issues that both of you were bringing up, which when I hear them, I go, oh, yeah, that's right. Yep, you're right. Uh-huh. Yep.
Well, there is
indeed
that.
To that. I was just kind of... I guess I was still having the joy of like, hey, they're in the movie. Sweet.
Yeah. I will say I would still so much rather see this kind of movie made, and I wish it had been supported more, and hopefully it'll gain some audience as it goes, because I do think there's original thought there, even if it's not an original property. And I do like the thought provocation of it. How many times, like, what am I going to sit around? Like, we definitely didn't have this conversation with the Kingsman, you know? Like,
no.
there's something about that that's so cool, and you're so hungry for it as a moviegoer.
One of the things that we know from the past 10 years is that sci-fi movies don't make the box office that they used to. And, I mean, everyone was wondering, you know, why didn't women come out to support a Ryan Gosling thing? But first off, like, he's not supposed to be emotional and emotive in this, and that's kind of a hard sell in a trailer. And dystopian futures are not usually great for women. Women are usually the casualties in this, and so it's a hard sell to get women to come to the theater when they know that they are on the chopping block in this film. You know, like, oh, your life is going to be shitty then. It's like, it's real depressing right now in real life. So kind of getting, like, the urge to go and see how worse it could get is not necessarily where most of us want to spend our time.
The sweet escapism of Blade Runner 2049. Yeah. Like, oh, so I won't be able to breathe in this air, and also all of the women around me are sex workers.
That's great.
Cool.
Perfect.
Looking forward.
Or I can shoot robots, or I don't know. Yeah. One of those two things.
All right, well, to wrap this up, y'all, let's go ahead and go through our regiment of what to tell the people about this. Should they stream it? Should they screen it? Or should they skip it? April, what do you think?
Fuck it, I was on the edge, but I think they should go and go to the theater, screen it. Yeah, I think so. I mean, the sound design, they're taking a cue from the Tangerine Dream sound design of and score from the original, and I think that's worth it in itself. It's a beautiful big picture, like we're saying, the cinematography is fucking phenomenal. You know, it's a delight. It may not have a lot of meaning, but I think it's worth it seeing on the screen.
Drea.
I totally agree. I had, like, I left with and I still have a lot of questions and a lot of things that I wish had pushed further, but this is the kind of film that's better on screen. I mean, it's gorgeous, the sound, and having this sort of philosophical immersion, I think, is important to get the most out of it that you can.
Yeah. Ricky.
Absolutely. Thank you, April. I agree 100% with both of you are saying. I would say to screen it. I saw it in IMAX.
Oh, nice.
On a Sunday morning. Your boy waking up early on a Sunday.
Oh, wow.
That's my church. That's where I go. and I went and saw it in IMAX, and fantastic from the direction, the cinematography. I didn't even really get into my boy Hans Zimmer, but the score I thought was just solid. I would say screen this movie, and if you have a dope-ass TV and a sound system at home, when this mug comes out on Blu-ray or whatever their future devices we're using, rent it, stream it, and do all that, because it's really great. And that's our discussion on Blade Runner 2049, y'all. Thank you for listening. We are going to take a break, and when we come back, we will be discussing how horrible men are, and...
Powerful men. Men in general can be fine.
Yeah, it's, I mean, there's a lot of exceptions there, Ricky.
I will say, as a man, we're hot garbage. We're hot garbage, and I feel very confident saying that. We have little moments, we have glimmers of hope, but we're hot garbage. And we'll be discussing Harvey Weinstein and what's happening in Hollywood right now. We'll be right back. You're listening to Who Shot Ya?
Hello, I'm Kerry Poppy.
And I'm Ross Blotcher, hosts of MaximumFun.org's Oh No, Ross and Kerry.
We wanted to tell you the good news that our podcast is now weekly.
Yeah, weekly. On Oh No, Ross and Kerry, we don't make extraordinary claims. We investigate them.
We go undercover with fringe religious groups, investigate paranormal claims, and participate in pseudoscientific medical treatments and report our findings to you.
In a time where alternative facts reign supreme, we cut through the murky spin to give you the real deal on topics like UFOs, the anti-vaccination movement, Scientology, and even apocalyptic churches.
We're even undercover for some very exciting investigations right now.
Well, not right now, right now.
Yeah, that would be unwise.
That's Oh No, Ross and Kerry at MaximumFun.org.
We show up so you don't have to.
Welcome back to Who Shot You? I'm your host, Ricky Carmona. With me in the studio, I have April Wolf, special guest Drea Clark. This is the segment of the show where this is just going to be real talk, y'all. Now, before we come in here and record, we have discussions about what it is that we're going to talk about. And a constant that has been happening recently is these sexual allegations that happen in Hollywood. Now, if you haven't been paying attention to the news, the story came out this weekend. Harvey Weinstein, it was one of those situations where
he's inviting people to his hotel room to try to fuck him.
You really
know what?
Yeah. I'm going to get into it.
Here's what's going to happen. April, would you please tell the people, because I feel I don't want these words
Ricky
to come out of my mouth.
Ricky over here pussyfooting.
Yeah, I know. I'm trying. See, exactly. Thank you.
And it's
school your boy here, please.
It's a delicate conversation, and I appreciate that our media is actually letting women lead a lot of this conversation. So, you know, props to a lot of those folks. The women at the New York Times who broke the story, which is really hard, having been a person who knows the legal ins and outs now of trying to make sure that the lawyers say that you can publish something. It'll take years, you know. So good job them. But Harvey Weinstein was definitely using his power to attempt to have sex with a lot of women. And in the course of that, sexually assaulted and raped women repeatedly. And we're talking about not just, you know, the lowly starlets who want to try to make it. We're talking like Gwyneth Paltrow, Asia Argento. We're talking about
Angelina Jolie.
Angelina Jolie, Cara Delevingne. Like, these are women. And also, Mira Sorvino. And you've got two women, Asia Argento and Mira Sorvino, whose dads are legends in the industry already. It does not matter. Gwyneth Paltrow
and
also.
Gwyneth, yeah.
These are people who, you know, they aren't weak. He was so flagrant with this that it did not matter who he was going after. It was just like, if you want to get a part in a movie and you're a woman, you know, make out with me. Give me a massage. The massage thing was like, ugh, God.
Gross.
Super gross. And his assistants are also complicit. He had one assistant in Europe who I think his only job, they're trying to uncover it right now, but his only job really was to bring these women up to the hotel room and to set them up in this situation.
And, yeah, and not just that they had a whole system, it sounds like.
Yeah.
There was this thing, and they were cognizant enough of how they set it up that there would often be a female executive, if it was a casting director, if it was another assistant, so that was there when the woman arrived.
Yeah, the honey trap.
Exactly, the honey trap, to like make it acceptable, this is above board, and then they would just sort of filter out, and then it would be this person alone with Harvey Weinstein in a robe and like a bucket of lotion or whatever.
Yeah. And now there's the issue of, I think, three members of the board at Miramax have resigned. But one of the things that I think...
The Weinstein Company.
I'm sorry, the Weinstein Company. Three members of that board had resigned the last when this was recorded. And they, in my opinion, should all resign. There is no way that they could not have known about these allegations. Everyone knew about it. It was more than an open secret, you know.
Well, because part of it is that he's paid off allegedly, or I don't know how validated. I don't know at what point allegedly can be dropped, but he's apparently paid off hundreds of thousands of dollars from so many of these. And then also, as someone who's worked in this industry for much longer than my skin line and, you know, any of my crow's feet would tell you, the non-disclosure agreements that they had to sign to work there are bonkers. You would not have those. Like, if you're, like, shooting The Amazing Race or something, fine. Yeah, like, oh, it's a live show. Like, there's the things that people had to sign just at any entry level would have been such a red flag.
This is a story that is just one of so many. Mm-hmm. We've been talking about this constantly. And I'm with Drea, where I've worked in media for so long that I don't know a single woman who hasn't been assaulted, harassed, or raped in their industry by a colleague or a person who is a superior. And that is, I mean, I'm talking about everyone. I could go through my phone and have every single person has at least one story. And so if this truly is a turning point, and I wrote something about this for LA Weekly, but if this truly is a turning point, get ready to be overwhelmed every single day, because there will be revelations from every single person you know. Like, get ready for your whole world to be blown apart, and to be for a lot of women specifically, losing a lot of time at work. I think we don't talk about this enough. I know that me and a lot of my film critic pals who are women, it is so hard to write a review right now, especially if a review has a character who is a male and who's abusing their authority in that way. And there's a lot of them. And especially if there's rape in a film, which if you've read any of my articles, there's way too much rape in film. And so it's hard to work. It's just hard to work. It's taking me twice as long to do the work that I should be doing in the past couple months because of these things coming out in our industry. And so I'm fucking pissed. I'm pissed for the victims, and I'm pissed for the perpetrators' families that have to deal with this shit, because the repercussions of all of this abuse is going to last for years and years and years. And, you know, Harvey Weinstein, of course, he's like always been, oh, I'm a champion of film. I always make a... But you know what? You're fucking up films, because no films will get publicity right now. Not a single one will break through this whole crazy, like, months-long thing that's going to happen with him, where that's the only thing that we're talking about, because we have to talk about it. So, you know, he's fucking up movies, too. He's just...
Fucked up movies in numerous ways, because I agree. This is going to be what we're talking about for so many things. But I'm also interested in what careers didn't get launched by Harvey Weinstein because of things related to this. And it's twofold. One, either female artists that he attacked or assaulted or, you know, made overtures on and was rebuffed, and then therefore he shut them down. But then the other part of it is, if you're Harvey Weinstein and what you see women as is a value system of who's fuckable and worth is associated with that, how many female creatives could have ever pitched things to him that he was like, yeah, I don't even want to attack you. I'm not into it. Like, like, you know, there's the long standing thing of people having films, like indie films we get all the time that sold at a festival, and they'll sell at or they'll get to the boardroom of the studio that got them, and they'll talk about, like, just candidly, like, it's great. Your female lead's not fuckable, but blah, blah. And, like, this is a boardroom of rich people, rich men, comfortable enough to just say things like that. Like, no big deal, but, you know, fuckability is a thing. And that's what pisses... I mean, there's a lot to be angry about, but the other thing of what was lost, or the people whose stories we have were, oh, I rebuffed advances and now I've happily been a seventh grade teacher because I never pursued filmmaking, because why would I get into that world of those garbage people?
I'm going to do some real talk real quick, because Drea, I have an answer to this. Have you ever left an industry or a job because of something like this?
No, no. But I, you know, except for, I know where you're coming from with that, except for I will say, film is one of those things that, like, when people, like, move to L.A. to make it, and then if they don't make it, they move home.
Well, there's, I mean, I will be honest that I have left a career. I have left careers, and I've left industries because of things that have happened to me. I think that it, I think that that's more prevalent than we're even talking about. I think that there's a lot of women that I know who've felt uncomfortable enough where they wanted to shift out of it. They felt not uncomfortable, just unwelcome, you know. And that's the, I mean, I just remember being in creative development and sitting in a room full of men who were, you know, just out of nowhere say, like, you know, I would never trust a woman as a plumber. Like, out of fucking nowhere.
I guarantee that person has never picked up a wrench in their life.
He didn't. Like, he didn't.
That's awful.
And, you know, and then just trying to, and then noticing that I was in the room and trying to backtrack it.
Ricky, do you ever find when you're, you know, hanging with a bunch of guys, talking about who would make the best plumbers, are there ever times when you are thinking, I should tag in and be like, uncool, I'm dropping the uncool flag, or... would you? Is it more that you look back later and you're like, oh, maybe that was not a great moment?
It's a combination of both with me. I will either be like, all right, guy, what are you, a fucking dinosaur? What's going on with you?
Yeah.
Or I will notice it after the fact and be like, oh, damn, I guess that thing was, I guess that moment was happening just right there. I feel like I'm a person where sometimes if things do get uncomfortable, I'm just going to step back. And I don't know if this is right or not, but I'm just going to step back and pay attention to what you guys are saying to know, like, noted. Thinking that to myself, I go, and that's how I keep myself in the right. I also know, well, Ricky, that's how shit stays silent, because you're not participating in the conversation or you're not calling those fools out as much as you should.
Oh, yeah. And it's not just men, though.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing. Like, the things that I've let people get away with in my professional life, overhearing certain things in a meeting where I didn't say anything because I just have to, again, like you said, internalize it and be like, oh, okay, I just, but you know, it's everyone. There's just like, there's just a level of power at the top of a kind of arrogance that it's hard to break through. And so we need like this new generation of leaders to really be outspoken.
I think that it's a, I think that it's always, and like that, that's with racial change that's happening now.
Yeah.
It's that line of power at the top's the one that has to be making these decisions. Like that the people who are stepping forward, I'm thrilled all these women, thrilled in quotes, disgust, that all of these women are stepping forward and backing up. Like, yes, I was also assaulted. Yeah, you're right. There's no way to talk about this without it being horrible.
No. Yeah. We were talking about how it's hard not to laugh about this stuff because you just have to exhale sometimes. I'm cracking the dirtiest, darkest jokes because I cannot handle how terrible this is. So there's just, there's no end in sight and everything is terrible.
The good news is the world is being destroyed. So even when all the people are bad, the skies are getting worse. We're going to be like Mad Max, Blade Runner in a day.
Let's bring it back to Blade Runner because maybe by bringing out all of these Weinstein accusations, all these other accusations about everyone else, maybe we're going to prevent a Blade Runner future.
Oh, you're so open.
Well, thank you both for saying what you said. Yeah, this is just one of those moments where I just like to shut the fuck up and listen. And
we love you, Ricky. No.
You're a good ally, Ricky.
I'm going to think about this for, I mean, it's still probably not going to sink in for like 3 or 4 days. But thank you for having that discussion and letting me listen to it. If I can say something to dudes out there, just fucking listen. Just listen to what women have to say, to what your boys have to say. When you know they're in the right and you're in the wrong, just open your ears. It's very important to... the only way you can have a conversation is if you listen to what the other person is saying. Men are garbage.
That was the best rape talk I had all week.
All right, well, before we leave you, we'd like to give everyone who's listening our staff picks. This is one we recommend movies to you that you can watch in the theater, on your TVs, streaming, what have you. So, Drea, What's your staff pick for us?
I'm going to take the plural of that to heart because I have two. One, in reference to the conversation we just had about Harvey Weinstein, there's a documentary called Agent 37, which I believe is on Netflix. It's definitely on iTunes. That's about the 1937 assault case at the MGM. And it was all hidden by the studio of assault and rape case of an extra, Patricia Douglas, I believe is her name. And mostly it's because it's fascinating and disgusting that this has gone on for decades. But for some historical context on the misuse of power, dig into Agent 37. If you'd like something a little more escapist on the Blade Runner tip, there's a great dystopian future film called Embers by a director named Claire Carré. And I think it's great. I love it's sort of a slightly female perspective, only in the sense that she's a female director. It's not like, oh, hey, gals, we're in the future, and this is what the future looks like.
And
we're
they
gals.
All get their periods.
Yeah, oh, my God, we're all in sync in the future. Yeah. But it's about a future where many are gone and memory is lost to everyone. So it's these interlocking stories, and it was a low budget. It's her first feature, and she won the Spirit Award for Someone to Watch for it, I think, a year ago. But it's a nice, you know, I like the indie balance of the big budget movies we're seeing, and I think Embers is a cool take on that.
April, what's your staff pick for the week?
I got a quick two because I just watched the 4K restoration of Night of the Living Dead, and I wrote a piece about it and its history because the history is fantastic. Rewatching it in such good quality is it's such a phenomenal experience, and I highly suggest everyone do see it. Even if you've seen it before, pay attention specifically to the editing, something that you may not have noticed in the kind of scratchier versions from the days of old. But the editing in this, it's so tight. I just love this movie so much. And then secondarily, you know, I think that's one that's going to be available on iTunes if it's not in your theater. Secondarily, a National Geographic documentary that's coming out called Jane, about Jane Goodall and her kind of experience where we see her fall in love with a man and see her fall in love with chimps and with her child. But then it's really a love story about a woman and her work. And it's Brett Morgan's new documentary. You guys will probably remember him from Kurt Cobain, Montage of Heck, and also The Kid Stays in the Picture. He, again, reinvents the documentary form in this. I saw it at Toronto, and I think I talked about it a little bit then for that episode, but I was weeping, and it's coming out, and I'm so excited for people to have this hero who is our new female rock star to worship.
Also, if you live in Los Angeles, Night of the Living Dead, I believe, is going to be at the Hollywood Forever Cemetery mm-hmm. in 2 weeks, I think, the 22nd on a Saturday. I'm going to try and go see that. If you live in Los Angeles, go to that because it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. In New York, it's Film Forum.
What's that?
New York is playing at Film Forum.
New York is playing at the Film Forum, y'all, so handle that. Oh, thank you very much for that, the snap pick, April. And now we're going to listen to Alonzo, who is not here with us this week, but he did call in and give us what his staff pick is. So go ahead and take it away, Alonzo.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for letting me do my staff pick by satellite this week. I couldn't be in. Sorry I couldn't make it. So the Showtime series episodes ended this week. I thought it was a great show. I don't feel like enough people watched it. I don't feel like enough people are talking about it. But for me, one of the revelations of that show is the actress Tamsin Grieg, who is this amazing British performer who has somehow not become a household name in the United States yet. And so if you haven't seen episodes, go to Showtime anytime and dig your way through all the seasons. They're hilarious. Or if you want to check her out on film, I recommend the very funny British comedy Tamara Drew. It's based on a British graphic novel, kind of a modernization of Far From the Madding Crowd. It stars Gemma Arterton as a young woman who bewitches several men in a small, charming British town. Tamsin Grieg plays a long-suffering wife of a pompous best-selling author, and she steals the movie. She's amazing. So if you're not on the Tamsin Grieg bus yet, get on it. See y'all next week.
Well, thank you very much for that, Alonzo. That's fantastic.
Tamsin Grieg, I'm going to jump in. She is so good. And there's another series called Black's Books on Netflix.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
And she's the, like, next door. She's this curiosity. Anyway, she's amazing. So, yeah, I'll just totally leapfrog and give the thumbs up.
We got on that bus while he was talking.
Yes. The bus came along and we jumped aboard.
Yeah, Ricky was driving.
I was. Appreciate it. We went through all the red lights because that's how I drive, y'all. Well, the pick that I have this week is a movie that was just released on Netflix. I would say it's a psychological horror film.
You're just piquing my interest.
And this is this movie called Gerald's Game, starring Carla Gugino. Very much enjoyed this movie. I was a huge Stephen King fan growing up. And then kind of like right around when Gerald's Game came out is when I was like, I think I'm good on Stephen King for a little while. And I did not know what it was about. And then it came back into my universe with the release of this movie. I made the mistake of watching the trailer, and the trailer gave away too much for me. All you should really know about this movie is that it's about a woman who is married to, in this movie, she's married, Carla Gugino is married to Bruce Greenwood. Their marriage is on the rocks. They go away to a cabin for a weekend to kind of rekindle their relationship. He has a heart attack during this, and then she is trapped on her bed, handcuffed, with no one to save her. And it gets real bad after that. I've said too much already. Have you seen this, April?
No, I've been waiting.
Oh,
I've been waiting.
I'm interested. As I was watching it, I was like, I'm interested to know what you'll think about this movie. I won't say I highly recommend it. Check it out. It's very good. Check it out.
Check it out as part of your prepaid Netflix subscription.
Hey, that's our show called Who Shot Ya? I want to thank Drea Clark for joining us this evening.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, girl. Please come back anytime. April, as always, un placer, as we say, my people. Hey, to everybody who's listening, we got the giggles. To everybody who's listening out there and who has been leaving us 5-star reviews on iTunes, we thank you dearly for those. We shout out to Amy Holtz and Slifer 2289 says our show, it's electric.
No. You can't say it's electric and not sing it.
Typewriter Cake, thank you. Josh Caleb 23, who writes to me on Twitter. I see when you write to me on Twitter, and I very much appreciate that. Says our show is straight fire. F-I-Y-A. Fire.
Nice.
Thank you. Chef Dogfish, big fan of your food. Chef Dogfish, thank you. And our last shout out to Bethinch 1v3. They say, this is the movie podcast I have been waiting for. Well, we've been waiting for you, so.
Bethinch 1v3!
I've got the tattoo already.
If you want us to give you any personalized movie recommendations, you can tweet us at WhoShotYaPod. You can also just tweet me directly at Ricky Carmona on Twitter. You can tweet at April at A Wolfel.
Yeah.
At Twitter. That's right. So, boom, I just pulled that off the top of the dome, PCO. Or you can email us at whoshotya@maximumfun.org. The producer of Who Shot Ya is Casey O'Brien. Our senior producer is Laura Swisher. This show is a production of MaximumFun.org. You've been listening to Who Shot Ya. We thank you dearly, and that's what's up.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.